Well, welcome to the roundtable for May 15th, 2024. Lieutenant Colonel Murray, and my apologies for no sit rep on Monday. I was traveling and dealing with a bunch of family stuff on Monday, so I didn't have a chance to sit down and actually either record or do a live show. So I'll be making up part of that this week because I'll be doing a one-on-one with Matt Bracken on Friday, and then I've got a couple others that are in the hopper that I may do show tomorrow. We'll see. Still waiting on details for it, but I could be on a show tomorrow and I'll post it if that comes to fruition. A lot going on this week there. You're seeing, in fact, that the Senate just passed the FAA bill, and within the FAA bill is digital ID and digital driver's licenses. So they're trying their best to enforce the social scoring system and roll it out under the cover of all these different pieces of legislation. And we'll see if it actually gets through the House. They left out a key piece to roll back some legislation. Go figure. But interesting week to say the least. And then today, Alex Jones posted something about Jimmy Carter and Jimmy Carter being on, I guess, the phrase was used that we're nearing the end. Meaning he's been on hospice, I think almost a year. He's been on hospice. So it'll be very interesting to see how much longer he lasts and what the, I guess the best way to say it is how the elite and the DC elite honor him once he passes. So we'll see. It's going to be, that'll be a very interesting tell on how they treat him, because you don't know anything about Jimmy Carter. He was a one-term president after Ford. And I think it was Ford that he replaced. And then Reagan replaced him. And it was right during the Iran hostage situation back in 78, 79, and 80. And Carter left office and dedicated himself to Habitat for Humanity. He did his, you know, presidential library like they all do. But Carter, he diverted from the path and put a lot of his energy into Habitat for Humanity. Actually, you know, spent time building houses for Habitat for Humanity, which I thought was it's a noble thing for him to do as a former president. And he was in the background doing a lot of diplomacy, is the best way to say it. So he was an interesting character, and you can make your own opinion about him. But I thought he was one of those presidents that was underrated for a lot of reasons, because he believed in diplomacy versus any kind of kinetic action. And, you know, under his watch, there was a lot of the military was in disarray. We were coming off of Vietnam, and he inherited a mess. So interesting guy, though. If you're paying attention to the news, he's been in and out of the news for the last year. He and his wife were married, I think, like 65 years. They were married a long ass time. So that's in the news this week. Bridge went down in Galveston, Texas. Part of it, anyway, was hit by a barge. So that's number three. And then there's the Slovak prime minister that was shot today. We'll talk about that. Lots going on. So, gentlemen, thanks for jumping on the show. I know we're missing one, so we'll get calibrated here in a minute. I'm going to start. Let's start with you. Let's talk through. You want to talk green flag, or do you want to talk Slovak?
Let's talk Slovak. But let me just mention real quickly, Jimmy Carter was a graduate of the United States Navy nuclear program, so he was not quite the country bumpkin that a lot of people thought. And but he came to the attention of the Bilderberg Group well in advance of his ascendancy to the presidency. In fact, he got invited into that because he had pioneered some trade programs and trade ideas with Central Asian territories for grain and stuff like that. And that brought him to the attention of the Bilderberg Group, who endorsed that for their globalist policies. That was sort of his ticket to the big show, so to speak.
Yeah, I left that part out. I think I think it's interesting. I forgot about his Navy service, to be perfectly honest. I had read that years ago. That's interesting. So interesting dude. Very interesting dude. But he's Bilderberg. Then he's part of the Illuminati slash cartel slash. Yeah. Slash. Yeah.
Well, yeah. You never know, right?
Yeah. Slash.
You never know.
So, okay. You want to talk Slovak?
So, yeah, actually, this is the more that I look at the situation, I believe correct me if I'm wrong, Robert Fico, Prime Minister of Slovakia, has had an attack on his life earlier today, potentially shot a couple of times by a handgun at fairly close range from what I could tell from the video. All I had seen was he was taken to the hospital, but I didn't have any word on if he was recovering or not. Hopefully he is, because he is, someone who's actually speaking out against the deep state, some of their programs, the World Health Organization, and what they want to do with emergency takeover power. He had spoken out against, against the Ukraine and NATO, namely. He doesn't want to see any chance of artificial being invoked and having us drawn into World War III. And so we had spoken about some other things as well. But, you know, all we have to do is look back a handful of years or less than that, really, and remember there was, I believe, 4 or 5 different world leaders, not large country presidents, but nonetheless, national leaders, who had spoken out against their countries mandating the COVID jab and playing along with that. And in fairly short order, at least 4, could have been 5, but it was at least 4 of those guys were dead. It didn't take that long. Clearly, their voices were silenced. And I think this plays right into that, right into that line of reasoning. And the whole globalist modus operandi that if you become too much of a problem, we're just going to erase you. And so that was a rather unprofessional attempt, in my opinion, but an attempt nonetheless.
I think part of it, correct me if I'm wrong, is he was also against the World Health Organization agreement or treaty or whatever that thing is. And I think that was the other piece that,
right,
was it in the mix there. And I'm sure that since that, I think that failed last week. They couldn't come to an agreement last week for a variety of reasons, which I think is fantastic. So it tells me that their plan is coming apart in front of them and they don't know how to keep the ship on course. And I think it's a bigger system at play there anyway that's falling apart.
But, you know, you look at parallels in history, right? And you think, gee, is this almost like 1914 and something kicking off? We, you know, you and I spoke earlier today about the coincidence of Jimmy Carter being in his last day or two in this realm potentially. And that may be an omen for other things kicking off as well.
Yeah, I would agree. I would wholeheartedly agree. I think there's nothing that's, how do I say this? So they've waged a number of different types of psychological warfare on everybody, right? So they've done the political propaganda, the political psychological operations. They've done the sociological propaganda, the sociological psychological operations, and they've laced everything with disinformation, misinformation, and they've laced everything with conspiracy. So I don't trust anything that's being said right now. So if Carter's in his last days, that to me is no coincidence. That to me is, it's just part of their messaging slash distraction that's happening right now. So there's a lot of pieces to this that are all, like you said, I think you and Raoul both said this, right? There's multiple lines of operation at play right now that are all converging at a certain point in time. And I think this is just one of those.
Well, it's obvious he's someone who had the courage to speak out, and you know, they had the vote on the World Health Organization situation, and he was against it. And he's spoken out on other things like Ukraine. I think it's one of these nip it in the bud type of scenarios, because I'm sure there's other people, particularly in the Eastern European vicinity, who realize that they could be very well be, you know, downwind of a tactical nuclear exchange, that don't want to see anything to do with it, any of that progressing.
Yeah, I would agree. So it's interesting, interesting timing for all of this. What I see happening, and you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, I see that the calmer heads in the room are starting to prevail across NATO. And the British Ministry of Defense came out today and said that there's no reason for NATO troops to be in Ukraine. That's a huge admission. And then you see different parts of the establishment coming out and saying that there's no reason for an escalation. I mean, it sounds to me like the calmer heads in the room are saying, no, we're fighting a losing battle. We need to let that end, wrap that up, and move on to something else. At least that's how I see it. Because they've amped the rhetoric around the avian flu, some other BS flu that they were talking about. Like, I'm still laughing about the whole pasteurized milk has avian flu in it. It's like, what is somebody, I literally think there's somebody going from dairy to dairy, dunking, you know, dead chickens in the milk. I mean, come on. But that to me shows that their narratives are starting to unwind, and they're literally the calmer heads are saying, we need to step away from some of these operations because we're not going to turn the tide. I know I'm not crazy on that one. Maybe I am.
One of the things that I thought was interesting about this was where Slovakia sits, right below Poland and right next to Ukraine and right north of Hungary. I have to wonder if he, first of all, I don't think that he's as conservative like Hodor ornament that got taken out by the leftists, but I think that if he wasn't willing to play with Poland and Germany, and probably in back rooms they're talking about using Slovakia as at least like forward operating bases, like we did, you know, with north of Iraq, Syria. What am I talking about? Not Hungary.
Use Hungary when we were doing S4 in Bosnia. I went in and out of there a lot.
Well, Slovakia is kind of in an interesting spot for this conflict to provide support to Ukraine. And there's only like 5 or 6 million people that live there, right? So if they get drawn into a war, there's going to be a lot of Slovakian women online looking for new husbands. So I can see their leader going, you know, I don't really think that this is a good idea. But not because he's pushing back against the globalists, but because he's literally looking at his tiny ass country going, oh shit, you know what? If we go up against the Russians, we're fucked. And Slovakia is landlocked, right? So they don't really have too many options. But to be dominated in the EU, he may have stepped out of line, and they may have sent an assassin to neutralize him. But I don't subscribe to the theory that this guy was the patron saint of conservatism. I don't think he was. But it's debatable whether or not he was taken out. But if he was taken out by the, you know, by the globalists, it was only because they probably want to draw that region more closer into their support, you know, of Ukraine against Russia. And this guy, like you said, Colonel Murray, you know, is he's holding a matchstick and he's surrounded by gasoline and he's standing on his own bridge and he's going, you know, no, I don't think we're going to go against Russia. So if that's what got him taken out, then that would be the only plausible argument to say that he was probably assassinated or attempted to, you know, if there was a political order to assassinate him, that's probably the only reason why. Otherwise, I honestly think the guy is either a leftist or a closet leftist. He hasn't really done anything impressive, you know, before this. He seems to change his opinion on stuff based upon his current worldview and you know, who's got their hand up his ass. So he probably just ran out of runway today.
Well, it's probably a series of, it's not any one issue, but probably a handful of issues that kind of brought him to the forefront. And we have to remember when we evaluate assassination attempts, there have been numerous assassination attempts that have been conducted in a very unprofessional manner. You look historically and boy, some of the knuckleheads that they send.
Like homemade gun guy, was that Enzo, the Japanese, was it Japanese prime minister? He got shot with like basically a potato gun.
Yeah, well, I can think of a few situations, you know, going back, but it's, you know, even look at Ronald Reagan. I mean, Hickley was not exactly high speed covert operative, and yet reputedly. The oldest Bush brother, the one people to know about, allegedly, I say that because I can't confirm it, had met with Hinckley's brother prior to the whole situation, trying to get, H.W., George H.W. Bush ascended in there and get rid of Reagan at that time.
Hey, Bruce, you wanted to make a point?
Yeah, can you guys hear me? I don't have the greatest signal right now.
Yeah, loud and clear.
The thing I would thought was interesting, a lot of people in the anti-vax circles that I'm aware of were speaking up about FICO and had videos of him, you know, speaking vociferously WHO and... I think that him being taken out is kind of an example of we could expect to see going at people that speak out.
Now you're gone. You back?
Oh, sorry. Okay, I'm.
Yeah, yeah, we're digital for a second.
Knocking off out against the vaccine. Seems like the attack kind of violent cycles could happen. That's all I got to say.
Yeah, I think though. So, I see this a couple of ways, right? If like Dave, you and I talked about this earlier, it literally seems like we're repeating the start of World War One, right? And we've been talking about World War for the last year because of what's going on. 2 years actually, because of what's going on in Ukraine. And what I find interesting about, especially about the psychological operations that they've been pushing on the public related to the vaccines and the vaccine situation, is that they know the truth is coming out, and yet they're still pushing for this World Health Organization agreement. And I think they know that it's unraveling, but they're still trying the machine moves without the head. So in my view, this is the machine was moving. This guy was probably recruited. And by the way, Dave, it does not surprise me at all that Bush Sr. had something to do with Reagan and that assassination attempt. That does not surprise me at all.
I have a book on it.
Yeah, he was a douchebag. He's the douchiest douchebag. He was the protege of Alan Dulles. And Alan Dulles is the one who set a lot of this in motion when he came back from Switzerland and at the end of World War II. He was the only American to have direct contact with the Nazis during World War II. And he's the guy that also brought created the GRU and basically turned the Gestapo, what was left of it, into the GRU after the war. That guy groomed George H.W. Bush to be the douchebag that he turned out to be. So I'm not surprised at all that he would be involved in that to try and raise himself to the level of president. But that tells you how far back this goes, right? This stuff's been going on for a very, very long time.
Well, I've seen a picture unmistakable silhouetted picture of George H.W. Bush leaning against the book depository, which of course is the building, you know, allegedly Oswald shot from. That's Oswald didn't actually shoot, but literally leaning against that building as Kennedy drove by. So he was right there at the epicenter in Dallas. So it's no stretch to think that he had something to do with other assassinations, including the attempt on Reagan.
Of course he did. Of course he did. That's right in his wheelhouse. That's absolutely right in his wheelhouse. I wouldn't be surprised if the CIA or MI6 had something to do with this one as well, because they're basically, I've said this before and it bears repeating, the CIA and the FBI have assumed the role of organized crime and the mob across the planet. They've basically done away with all the crime families and they've assumed all those roles, to include the blackmail role by taking all the evidence off of Epstein Island. They went in, they took all the evidence, nothing really came of it, and then all of a sudden they get a bigger building, their budgets are unlimited, and every time somebody wants to shut them down or at least curtail their ability to do anything, they miraculously show them some videos and they're back in business. So I definitely think that they have had something to do with just about every assassination on the planet, especially in Africa. All right, so you want to move on to Green Flag? Because I think we should talk through that. Matt, what we're talking about is Matt Bracken did an episode on Coffee and a Mic where he talked about Green Flag operations. It was actually, he was talking about an article that was written by Vox. I'll post the link in the comments section. It's worth watching because I thought Matt does a really good job of explaining how, and tying it back into historical context, which is why I wanted to bring it up here. All right, we've got a diverse group that's got a very, varied historical knowledge across this group. Right, we've got Civil War experts, we've got Revolutionary War experts. It's an interesting team, and there's a lot of parallels between the Vox article, which I'm posting right now, and what we're seeing live and how things are developing live. Who wants to start?
I'll jump in there.
Go for it.
So let's put a title on what is Green Flag operation. I'll try to summarize it. Just like a false flag is a motivated trigger that we're all familiar with, that term, a green flag, the best way to describe it is it's like a false flag, but it gives you the invective, it gives you the permission to do something that you otherwise wouldn't normally be able to do. So a green flag in this case, and Matt talked about, there's a huge body of evidence that we knew Pearl Harbor was coming. For example, we were pissing off the Japanese, we were messing with their oil, we were basically provoking them. There may or may not have been a stand down order when radar detected, you know, their units inbound, but basically they allowed Pearl Harbor to get attacked. They didn't maybe think it was going to be at that level of damage, but the U.S. government allowed Pearl Harbor to be attacked because they wanted to enter into the Second World War. A green flag for the October 7th attack on Israel. There's no fucking way that Mossad had no idea that either this was being planned, this was, you know, being activated, or that these guys were inbound. And it's been blacked out. Like, I mean, imagine if we were Israelis and Israeli conservatives were sitting around going, how in the fuck could they not have known this was coming, right? So that's another good example of a green flag operation where something was happening. Either it was something that you set conditions for, meaning that it was your own people that set this thing up and you just flicked the first domino, or you allowed your enemy to set up all their dominoes and you allowed your enemy to flick that first domino, knowing that the result would be giving you a use authorization to do something that you normally wouldn't be able to do. So essentially, green flag is either creating a situation that is going to allow you to take action, or allowing a situation to occur that is going to justify a response action. So that Did I get that close enough for the kernel groups?
Sounds good to me.
Yeah.
So
I think that's spot on.
So we're not talking about a false flag here, because a false flag is classically like, you know, the FBI pipe bombs, where, you know, they created the situation so that they could exploit the result of getting that out in the air. The green flagging that Matt went into, and he went into it at depth, right? But it allows our government to do things where I think they're using the old playbook of patriotism, and at the same time they're putting all of us on domestic terrorist lists because we are patriots, and we realize that everything that we fought for and believed in has turned out to be fucking bullshit. And we have leftists in charge. So they want to play both ends against the middle, where they want the white Christian patriot from down south to go fight wars and die, but they don't necessarily want that motherfucker to come home either, right? So they're trying to figure out a way to set conditions or to allow something to occur. And I would say it would be allowing intelligence reports to go unanswered and unactioned, so that there is a legitimate terrorist attack in the United States that's going to justify this government putting out an order to reactivate veterans and to essentially institute a draft so that they can send all of us to the fucking meat grinder in Ukraine. So that is a perfect recipe for a green flag operation, is to allow something bad to happen so that it gives you permission to do something even worse.
And if you look at this from the information perspective, the psychological operations and the propaganda perspective, the one piece that's missing right now is they don't have the cultural narrative. In the past, they were able to use a green flag, and Matt did a very good job of pointing this out. Around Pearl Harbor, it was a battle cry, right? Roosevelt had turned off the oil supply to Japan. It's covered a little bit in the movie, in the newest version of Midway, and it was the Achilles heel of the Japanese. They were getting all their steel from us, they were getting all their oil from us, and they were getting a lot of other goods and materials from us. So they had to look elsewhere, which is part of the reason why they went into China, into Southeast Asia, into Southeast Asia, and into Indonesia. They went into those areas to go after resources. They weren't necessarily trying to conquer those areas. They were more interested in getting the oil and the resources to bring it back to Japan to continue the war effort. People and you know, personnel was not their issue. Their issue was raw materials. So Roosevelt knew we needed to get into the war, had to get around the isolationist laws, and he used that to his advantage. And, you know, the Gulf of Tonkin in Vietnam was a microcosm of that, but it still was a justification for the government to and LBJ to get us deeper and deeper into Vietnam. So if you look at this from the way they use information, they're desperately trying. And this is where I think the desperation is. I don't think the desperation is in their planning. The desperation is in them trying to figure out how to recapture the cultural narrative and sway the public back into buying into the propaganda, especially the sociological or cultural propaganda. Because since Twitter was you know, freed from Jack Dorsey, and there's a freer platform now, relatively, that has changed the cultural narrative. I think Rumble and True Social and the other platforms have done that as well. And because of that, they don't have complete control. And there's a lot of people in the industry that are in both DC and in Hollywood that still believe that they control or have information superiority or information dominance. Those are two bullshit terms, but these people believe that, but they also know that they need to get back a cultural narrative in order for a green flag to truly be successful, and the propaganda that stems out of that to truly draw people into the narrative. And that's where I think this is headed. I think they're, and Matt's timing on this, I think, was perfect, because we had talked about this kind of an operation briefly months ago, but we never really expanded on it because we got caught up doing reconstitution and other conversations, which I think are just as important. And that said, I think the next order of battle that they're trying to figure out which card they play. They've got the avian flu and the avian flu vaccine set up. And I think they were waiting for the World Health Organization treaty to roll that out, because they've been talking about Disease X for what, a year now? It's easily been a year. And that to me is where I think this is going. I think they're trying to set it up so they can conduct or let, like you said, let an operation happen, ignore the intelligence, and use it as a way to expand the war with Iran, to expand the war in Ukraine, and bring NATO into it. The piece that I don't get, and you guys could probably chime in on this better than I can, is that NATO doesn't have the production capacity. They're deindustrializing Germany right now. They don't have the capacity to build and to restock war supplies. That's where I see their Achilles heel in all of this.
Germany has had to buy back a lot of their Leo 2A6 main battle tanks just to be competitive as a military force. So you're right. It's not about them producing. It's been about reacquisition from areas that they had leased, countries that they had leased some of their Leopard 2s over to. And by the way, just for anyone listening, to wrap it up in simplest terms, the green flag from my perspective as a division level planner is setting conditions to allow an opportunity for a catalyst event that promotes or supports your particular agenda. And just one example I thought was sterling from American history, few people know about, is the Boston Massacre. My understanding is that the famous lithograph of the Boston Massacre that Paul Revere had done was actually completed before the Boston Massacre occurred. So Sons of Liberty and some of those organizations had more or less helped to engineer that event. And the British squad that turned out in pursuit essentially stepped into the trap. And you know, it was one more catalyst towards our revolution.
Rel, I know you got some thoughts on this. Did we lose Colonel Piper?
Yeah, Rally. I do.
Don't sound so thrilled. Yeah, don't sound so thrilled.
Now, the thing that I believe that they were not going to be permitted to do, and now they got the first, in the infamous phrase of, you know, get your nose under the tent, so you can get the whole camel under the tent. And that is, the House passed a law to actually put an asterisk on the First Amendment. You know, you can talk about anything. Oh, they tried to shut down, don't talk about, you know, stolen election. But now they're getting serious about, you can't be anti-Semitic. You can never talk bad. And the whole anti-Semitism thing is poison. And I've talked to Dave about this a number of times, because they're not Semitic. 90% of them are not Semitic. They come from the Ukraine region. They're Khazars. And if you talk to your medical folks have questionnaires now. When you check in, do you have that Khazarian bloodline? Because they've discovered that bloodline has specific medical challenges, and they're asking for people to acknowledge that. And so when we realize that these people are adopted from where they were and took on Judaism, there's a very interesting book written by two good professors, and I recommend if you want to read into it, read both. One's a good storyline, the other one is a lot more factual based. But they have hidden behind this shield for a long time. You cannot talk about anything. There's a really good article about Jack the Ripper that threw that theory on the table that Jack the Ripper was actually Jewish and was protected by the community and put pressure on the legal system that they couldn't identify him nor prosecute him because he's Jewish. It would be anti-Semitic. And this whole anti-Semitic thing that you can't talk about it does not allow us to point out that there's numerous war crimes being done by Bibi and his, you know, stormtrooper troops. And the fact that we're going to send them a whole lot of ammo, we're going to send them a whole lot of support, we're going to give them a way to flush what they see as the in their own terms, they consider it Goya. And if you don't know what that is, I highly recommend you do a little research and find out what Goya is and what they believe in Goya. And the fact that right now there is so much leadership led by these non-Semitic Jews that a lot of what's going on is being pushed by this small group of leadership. If all these leaders in Washington, D.C., and we could go through them name by name, there's 12 at the very top. If they were all, and Matt brought this up, if they were all, you know, coming out of Salt Lake City and were Mormon Latter-day Saints, we'd all be asking questions. What the heck, over? But that's not it. And so thus, you can't talk about it. You talk about it, they will destroy you. And they have the power in every realm. Our four top government entities, not the Department of Defense, that's a whole different discussion, but the Homeland Security, State Department, Treasury, Justice, they're all of the same historical bloodline. And I know nobody wants to talk about this, but it's pretty darn dirty. And those guys are connected to the Rothschilds. They're connected to the central banks. They're connected to all of this stuff. And our good friend, the World Economic Forum, they're all in it.
And I think this goes.
That's where I look at it. They're taking away our rights, and they're going to use this.
I think they're doing it. They are. They're definitively doing it. Right. The first step of them passing the legislation to ban any kind of quote unquote hate speech or anti-Semitism is the first step. Right. That to me was the test. That was the test case to see if they could do it without a bunch of blowback. That's how I saw that.
Agreed.
And I think that the next phase of this is they'll go after any kind of questioning elections. I mean, they've been using lawfare against anybody who questions the elections for what, 2-3 years now. And that whole, that you would think that would unravel right now. It's not unraveling. They've actually been very successful at using lawfare against anybody who questions that narrative.
They just deplatformed Rudy Giuliani over that issue, right?
And the FBI and DOJ had a joint conference just the other day talking about threats to election workers and how many people that they've arrested and literally prosecuted and are in prison for. They used a term, you know, everything that everybody on the phone here would agree with, which is if you literally say, I'm going to kill you because you're not counting the votes that I want you to count or whatever. I mean, having volunteers out there working and being interfered with, nobody would disagree that you don't do that. the problem is that they're not going after the actual election fraud and things that are coming out now that they have canceled all those other people that you're talking about, or prosecuted all those other people that you're talking about for calling out actual fraud that should have been investigated by the FBI and it wasn't. They are changed or pivoting on that. And they're going, no, we're only going to prosecute and go after people if they threaten election workers. And the election workers that are being threatened are the ones that were putting up poster board to cover the windows and the ones that were pulling out extra votes from under the table and all that other stuff. So a reasonable person would be angry if they saw their election being stolen, right? But if you threaten that person who's stealing your election, that's where the twist is, then you're going to be prosecuted by the FBI. They're going to hunt you down. Go ahead and fucking write those laws, you know, and those anti-Semitic whatever laws. It's always perplexed me why there is a rationality to have a thing called a hate crime. If you fucking murder somebody, that is a hate crime. So did you hate him extra bad because you were mad at him for whatever particular reason? Or, you know, do you just murder them because you were in a hate-filled rage? So having the First Amendment now have to pass a litmus test where, well, you're allowed to say this, but you're not allowed to say that. That's the same thing. It's, we just need to go, fuck you. We're not going to comply. And I'm not going to comply. If something's on my mind, I'm going to say what's on my mind. And everybody, you must, I'm not going to implore you or encourage you. I'm telling you, you must not comply with this bullshit or we're all going to be slaves. So for all you normies out there that are afraid of whatever, go ahead and get your 10th fucking vax on the way to the ovens, but I'm not going to play that game.
And I'm curious from a constitutional standpoint, how they can put a modification into the Bill of Rights and the First Amendment without a two-thirds majority vote or whatever the standard is for such high-handed changes to our fundamental documents.
Well, they did it with the second and the fourth and, you know, other of what, our Bill of Rights.
What did they modify with the second?
These conditional things. You're allowed to have a gun, but you can't have this kind of gun, or you can't have this kind of gun because you're in that state, or you don't have this one looks ugly, that type of stuff. There's no
precondition. Can't have too many rounds in your magazine.
Yeah. So we allowed that. We allowed that. It set a precedent, and now they're going to go after the rest of the amendments.
Well, I'm hoping that this is something that passes, kind of like the whole pronoun thing with the you, her, it, she, all of that crap. Because clearly this is just one more attempt to control every aspect. Well, Steve was just saying they want to control the narrative. And obviously part of how they do that is literally by controlling the language and making certain things, incommunicado. You can't bring it up, you can't communicate it, you can't send that sentiment in any format. And I agree with you 100%. We've got to resist this. Raul, I think your point is excellent, and the way I look at what you were saying is it's not a matter of being anti-Semitic. It's are you Zionist or anti-Zionist? And as you and I have discussed offline, there's plenty of people who are Zionists who are not Jewish, and there are plenty of Jews who are anti-Zionist. So I'm not sure how they differentiate between all of those subdivisions. But, I think people have got to push the limits on stuff like that and just resist this nonsense. And most of all, we've got to start holding some of our leaders, our so-called representatives and senators accountable. It's just utterly atrocious what these people are trying to do. It's just ridiculous. Everybody should be on the phone with those people, sending emails, sending them hate mail, letting them know exactly how they feel about this stuff 24/7. This they're not going to stop until they get stopped.
And for the elected officials that do show up to their legislative district meetings if I'm mad because they deal with single issue voters all the time, right? And so it isn't just one person, but if 25 or 30 people or a whole legislative body says, we don't like this, or you should do that, or they get 80 phone calls from people that are in their legislative district, they do listen to that. And at least in Arizona, anyway, there's several of our precinct committeemen that have authored laws or contributed to laws that have been heard first, second, third, read, brought to the floor, voted on, either signed or vetoed by the governor. But the legislators took action because we had activist voters who were participating and they were influencing those representatives. So that is 100% valid and effective. It isn't, if just one of us calls up Nancy Pelosi and says, you suck, you're a witch, you know, she didn't care. But if you, local action, national impact, if you're talking to your state senators and your state representatives, and you're going to school board meetings, you're going to all the other things, we'll just talk about the politic part of it. That is effective when you're showing up to their office, you're calling them, you're dialoguing with them, you're sending them email. It helps when you're a precinct committeeman or an active political operative in the party, but even just as a voter, it matters. And there's a lot of statistics to go into that. How, you know, what is one email? Is, you know, like 100 voters, or one letter is like 1,000 voters. One, voicemail call is, you know, like 4,000 voters. Like, I don't know what the statistics are, but they know for every contact that they get, whether it's in person, mail, letter, whatever, that does scientifically represent a body of people. So if you have 387 people out of 20,000 people in a legislative district all call for the same issue, that basically means 80% of the people that voted for you are not going to vote for you again if you don't go the direction they want. So it absolutely matters when you reach out to your representatives.
Well, I'm just endorsing the idea that everybody gets on board with it. I can see, you know, in the live chat on Rumble, people saying it doesn't matter. I have to think that they at least take notice if they get a huge response from their constituents. I'm not saying they'll act on it, but they at least take notice. But let's keep one thing in mind. You know, there was one of the congressmen or congresswomen, as it were, came out a little bit earlier and made us take notice that the Jewish lobby in the United States, or maybe I should say the Zionist lobby, effectively...
Well, I'm going to go back to something, Dave, real quick before you keep going on this. One of the things when we're talking about legislation to remember is they already know that they're not going to have public support and they're not going to have a 2/3 majority to change the Constitution. So them adding language to bills to restrict free speech is a way to go around doing that. And their end state there is to slow down laws and the red flag laws and all that other bullshit that they've introduced, especially in Washington State. They know that it's not going to be overturned by the Supreme Court. They know it won't be, because the Supreme Court is just like with the election stuff. They've chosen not to listen or to hear any of those cases for standing or whatever mechanism they've used to dismiss. The Senate, the House, and the elite already know that they've got that in the bag. So now they'll slowly ratchet up the language so that they restrict any kind of questioning of any of the illegal activities, any of the illicit activities. They'll slowly ratchet up and they'll put it into a bunch of different legislation so it's not in one place. And that's how they've been doing it for the last 3 to 4 years. It's just now we're starting to see the pattern develop with free speech. I mean, there's a reason why they never repealed Section 230. Because they wanted to use it to give air cover to all of the social media platforms, but more importantly, to give air cover to the CIA and to NSA and the other government agencies that are trying to restrict free speech. I see them passing more legislation. And just like this FAA bill that just went through, literally it says, and the bill has nothing to do with digital IDs, but there's language in there that says they will do digital ID, mobile driver's license identification, or ID cards. They're slipping in this language into just about legislation now because they know it's not going to be questioned or overturned. So I'm with Troop. They can pass whatever they want. I think the public, just like with the pistol brace ban, the public will eventually just ignore it, and then the law will be meaningless. And I don't think the public is going to go the space of pick it up. I think that comes later. And it won't be over this. It will be over something else. But they're doing the same thing with 2A too. So it's just a matter of time before the public realizes that all of this has been taken away from them, despite their best efforts to, I guess, be ungovernable or be, you know, to monitor what's going on, I guess the best way to say it. Go ahead, Dave. Sorry about
that. No, it's fine. I just wanted people to be aware that it had come out recently due to some courageous individuals, really only 8 of them within our Congress, that the Jewish lobby takes and essentially indoctrinates people in our Congress and has them sign paperwork saying that they will, under all conditions, support the Jewish state and the Jewish interests. And if they don't follow that, then you can pretty much forget any kind of fundraising or endorsements or things like that for re-election. And from what I understand, out of 537 or whatever it is, congressmen that we have, there's only 8 who are not signed on board to that. And so that's pretty daunting when you talk about, you know, people talk about the National Rifle Association being the strongest lobby in Washington. I don't really think that's the case. I think
the NRA has been neutered since what's his name? The
Wayne
LaPierre. Douchebag LaPierre. Yeah.
He basically neutered the NRA years ago. That has the best
thing that ever happened in the NRA was getting rid of him.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like I said, just wanted people to be aware of that. That's a Zionist lobby influence in our Congress is enormous. And Steve, I agree with you that with any of these things, laws lack a certain validity if they're inherently unenforceable. And so, you know, it's going to be up to people to talk and express themselves how they want. We just have to be careful because I'm sure they're going to be more than happy to make examples out of people.
Oh, that's absolutely the point. The point of it is to set conditions so they can go in and go after anybody that's patriotic. I mean, this is communist doctrine that we're facing here, right? And the way to outdo them is what we have been doing. We've been doxing the people that are writing the laws. We've been doxing the people that are behind the shadows. It's all those bureaucrats that need to be doxed so the public knows exactly who's behind the levers, right? And that's the piece that's starting to, I don't want to say gain momentum because it's already had momentum, but it's gaining more momentum. And I'll use the example of the Washington governor's race right now. So the AG, Bob Ferguson, has been running for governor. He's the next anointed shitbag to take over Washington State after Jay Inslee leaves. They have completely institutionalized cheating across all of their state election boards and their state election precincts. It's completely usurped by the powers that be in the oligarchs in that state. It should be no surprise that Bill Gates is a key contributor in that state. Go figure. But every time that guy posts anything, he gets slammed in social media. He can't post anything in social media without getting slammed by the public. Public knows what his story is. And that's gaining more and more momentum, and it's not just social media where that's happening. This is the part that I want people to key in on. The most valuable thing we have right now at our disposal, it's not kinetic, it's not shutting things down, it's doxing the people that are behind this. That is the piece that is the most important, and using the information space to out these people. That's the best thing we can do right now. especially the bureaucrats behind the scenes, because they enjoy anonymity. They can hide behind a public official who will be the buffer. But you put somebody that's behind the scenes, that's in either in the in DHS, in the FBI, or somebody that's in a city official, that could be as innocuous as the person that stamps the approvals on any of the different, what do you call them? You have to get licenses, or you have to get a permit to do something. Those people are being used to do things at the state level that impact everyday voters. Those are the people that need to be doxxed. They all need to be brought to the light, because they hate that the most. And most of the bureaucrats in DC, they're career people. They've been there forever. You can't remove them. That's Trump took a lot of shit because he basically rewrote the hiring laws and the retention laws for federal government, because they have, you know, federal employees had a union that was very strong. You couldn't fire anybody. They could literally bring a gun to work and threaten people, and the only way you could remove them was through, you know, criminal action. And the way the system is now, you can fire people for cause. You can fire people for, you can move them, downsize them, whatever. But if we dox all these people and the public knows exactly who's behind this, case in point, does anybody know anybody that works at DARPA? Do you even know what DARPA's working on? DARPA's been miniaturizing technology for the last 20 years. They've been creating this technology that's being used against us right now. And there's people at DARPA that are working on the information war in the information space as we speak. And they're working against the country. Do you know who any of those people are? No, but we should. We should know exactly who works at DARPA. We should know exactly what they're working on. We should know exactly what charters they have from the federal government. Just like, you know, we wouldn't know about IMO, the Immigration Management Office, if it wasn't for Michael Yawn or for some of the others that have been down to the Darien Gap. We wouldn't know about that. We wouldn't know about those bureaucrats. We also wouldn't know that Mayorkas used to run that organization before he was put in as a DHS secretary. Wait, can you tell I just got off an airplane? The point is that this is the information war is more important right now than kinetic. And that's the piece that we can disrupt through a variety of means. We don't need to have social media to disrupt their narratives. It helps, but there's a variety of ways that we can do that without using social media. And that's the piece of this. That's why this green flag discussion is so important, because the more people understand the principles they're using, again, and I've said this before, and I'll say this again, you figure out the numerology that they're using, you're breaking the JN2 codes from World War II, because they use numerology and dates for everything they do. They're ritualistic about it. And if you could crack the code on that, I guarantee you that we can disrupt their operations without having to fire a shot. And that'll be the most important thing we do, because if we can bring the system to collapse where they can't control it and they can't control the information, guess what? Game over for the elite. That's the mechanism we use to take this back. Because if we drop into civil war, they win. If we let them start a world war, they win. If we disrupt everything they do and dox everything they do, guess what? They lose, and they lose badly. That's the best thing we can do.
Unfortunately, the presence of 10 or 20 million potential combatants, military age males from other countries, they have the capacity to take that out of our hands and seize the initiative, so to speak. That's part of the danger that we face.
I think that's omnipresent, but again, they can't risk a wider conflict here. They have to set conditions so people willingly sign up for their control grid. Let's say there's 2 or 3 million or 5 million Chinese that are on the ground. they know that the American public is, and Bao said it the best, there's a firearm, there's a rifle behind every blade of grass. They know that.
Hey, yeah,
they know if this goes kinetic, all of those troops they've imported to be police, to be the UN police force, those guys are going to get smoked. All of them. I don't think it's, and yeah, it's going to suck for a while, but they know if this goes in that direction, they lose control. They need to maintain control and get people to voluntarily sign up for this. That's why they're so desperate to get the cultural narrative back. They need people to sign up.
Well, Steve, you were talking about DARPA, and I can recall seeing the head of neurologic studies and ethics for neurologic studies, ironically, from Georgetown, is the guy who is leading the effort at DARPA in their number one field of study, which is neurologic influence. How can they make groups of people, individuals and groups of people, do what they want without going kinetic?
Yep.
So to speak, the brain is the ultimate battlefield. And that is the next, I'll call it sixth generation warfare, if you like, but that is the realm on which they have been working for years. And
that's why I brought it up.
Yeah, exactly. I get concerned about nanotechnology and different things like that, because it can be around you without you even knowing it. But at the same time, I'm more concerned about the neurologic influence, because you're talking about controlling the narrative. They're working on levels and planes of communication and influence techniques that most people can't even comprehend.
Oh, I agree. And the piece I would add to that is that it's all done. You know, that's where Yuval Harari has come. That's where his comments have come from, is the work that's being done at DARPA on neurological messaging. And his what's interesting, though, is I don't think they're quite there yet, because his narrative's changed about that. You know, we can hack the human body. That was about graphene oxide and self-structuring nanobots or nanotechnology. And I don't think they're there yet to be able to control the body or do the machine-human interface. I just don't think it's there yet. But you're right. They're working on it, and they have been working on it for years. There's a book called The Pentagon's Brain. It's about DARPA. It was written, I don't know, 10, 12 years ago. And it talks about how they've shrunk technology and miniaturized technology, and that DARPA was leading the pack on that. And they don't talk about any of the bioengineering work that they're doing. That's come out of other sources, but it's a very good read if you want to understand what DARPA is really doing. And again, it's 10, 15 years old, but the book is, it gives you an idea that the enemy is 2 to 3 or even 5 or 10 years ahead of us when it comes to their planning cycle. And I think where we win this is on the information space, right? If they release a bioweapon, we can't do much about that. If they start a nuclear war, we can't do much about that. But we can keep them disrupted as much as possible.
Quick comment, Steve. You said DARPA's 3 to 5 years ahead of us. I would suggest everyone listening in the audience, if you have streaming capacity, get online and watch the first episode in the 10th season of The X-Files. They cover so many different things from, you know, a decade or more ago that are current affairs, that it's utterly remarkable. And it tells you that these people, they plan decades ahead, not just a few years. But episode 1, season 10 of The X-Files, revelationary statements, truly mind-blowing.
Yeah. The amount of money that we threw into tech back in the 80s and 90s was astounding. And people have no idea how far ahead we were then. And, you know, the normal stuff, like, you know, tanks and planes and ships, that's all old technology. These people are working on stuff that, you know, 20, 30 years ago was light years ahead of where we are even today. And it wasn't operationalized. And now they've got the ability to operationalize this stuff. I don't think they're quite there with the neuro technology, but I think they're working damn hard to get there. And I think that they might have an ace in the hole we don't know about, but regardless, I think if they push this too far, you know, there's a karma aspect to this too that's going to affect them, and I think it's going to be ugly for them, to be honest with you. So the interesting side of all of this is we're seeing more and more of their plans and more people being outed every day. And I think that's, you know, like the interesting one for me is today, I can't remember who it was that posted it, but basically Peter Daszak's organization, I can't remember the name of the health organization, was defunded by NIH and by Congress. Too little too late, but it's interesting that that's happening right now. Just like it's interesting that things are coming back full circle, like the Hillary tapes on the Wiener laptop and those cycles, those stories recycling. I mean, we're not seeing anything new come out. We're seeing all this old stuff being regurgitated. That's a very interesting play. It's either they're stalling or they're out of material. That's how I see it. Maybe it's just distraction. Echo Health. Yeah, thanks. Deegan's thanks for posting that. They were defunded. Echo Health Alliance was defunded today. So it's interesting. Let me get my notes here, make sure we're on topic here. We talked about Green Flag. We talked about Slovak, we talked about that. One thing that I did want to touch on today. There was a couple of stories that were published in the last couple of days about, and it showed up, of all places, it showed up in Como 4 News up in Seattle. They're talking about the spike in addictions right now. Across all of the spectrum of addiction, sex addiction, chemical dependency, drug addictions, alcoholism, depression. There's a number of different mental health disorders that are spiking right now. And I think the thing that people need to keep in mind is, especially with social media is designed to be addictive. It's a part of the sociological propaganda. It's a part of that mechanism. It's designed to be what's called sticky. And that means that they want to keep you in whatever app you're using, whether it's Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, TikTok, doesn't matter. They want it to be what's called sticky. And that's where you keep clicking into the application farther and farther and farther. And and it's why Apple has an app on their phone to give you an idea how much screen time you have. Social media was always designed to be an intelligence source for the Central Intelligence Agency, NSA, et cetera. And the amazing thing about social media is that it's not just addictive for the aspect of the content. It's addictive for the aspect of creating a persona. And I've talked about it in multiple sit reps and multiple podcasts, but the sociological, psychological operations that are being played out right now are starting to expand, because as you see the social fiber of our country starting to fray, which it is, and I will say this out loud, I have never seen more angry people in my life than I did in Seattle over the last week. Those people are angry, and I was agitated. There is literally this level of angst and agitation, but that wasn't the most compelling aspect of the whole trip. The most compelling aspect of the whole trip was the fact that the number of people that are addicted to something was mind-boggling, literally one in three people has some kind of some form of an addiction, whether that's addiction to the phone, whether that's addiction to the to social media, whether that's addiction to some kind of chemical or sex addiction, literally one in three. I was shocked at that number, but that was the intent all along of social media, was to bring people to that level. Because think about how much control they have when you're addicted to a platform. If you spend all day on TikTok, they own you. They can influence you through video. They can influence you through sound. They can influence you through repetition. And that's the whole point of it. So I've seen it. Go ahead.
I have a... So for a long time, I think a lot of us probably went through the same molting stage. We were trying to find out what the SOP for life is, and there is none, right? The standard operating procedure, wake up, just tell me what to do, right? If you lose God, if you lose your faith, if you don't believe in God, and I always tell people, it's okay if you don't believe in Jesus because he believes in you. He'll be there waiting. If you lose a focus, I'm a child of the 80s, right? I wanted to be a Jedi when I grew up. Use the force. So if you have something more important than you are, or you're serving a cause greater than yourself, or you're doing something that is of greater good and greater importance, and you see yourself as just a small little dot in that greater thing, all of a sudden, you don't have these dependencies. You don't have these addictions. You don't have these proclivities because you have focus. You have direction. You have discipline. You have worth. You have value. The same way that we take scrubs off the street and we break them down and indoctrinate them and turn them into soldiers. It only takes about 8 weeks to teach somebody how to kill somebody, but it really takes about 2 years of repetition to develop a soldier. And it's the same thing with gangs and with any other criminal element or any other good or bad force. If somebody is in the Shaolin temple and they train long enough, they're going to become David Carradine, right? But if they're just wandering around on the street, they're going to be digging in garbage cans. They're going to be trying to find whatever the easiest, cheapest, freest, least risk thing is that's going to get them through life. When we made life easy for everybody, we attacked the nuclear family, we meaning society, attacked a nuclear family, attacked a church, attack ethics and morals, attack all of the things, chivalry, chivalry I'm sure is a toxic masculinity term now. You take all that away and you have nothing left but whatever they lure in front of you. So it doesn't surprise me at all that there's this massive increase in whatever kind of addiction, because you've taken away every other avenue of pursuing self-worth and achieving any type of, success or self-value in life. You take away people's self-worth and you take away their purpose. It's extremely easy to control them at that point. So it doesn't surprise me at all that this is happening. And the best way to cure it is people become active participants in their own life. People that go to church are very dedicated to church. I knew a few people that go to three or four different churches. We call them church whores, right? Because they I got to go to the Methodist church for this, but then the Lutherans are doing something else. But, my friend goes over to this non-denominational church, and so I'm going to be over there. And the holy expandiform of Jesus encompasses your entire life, and every free moment you're involved in church, right? So that can happen with anything. That can happen with Pokemon and Yu-Gi-Oh cards. That happened to me, with this social media thing that we're doing, trying to put our outreach out there. But all of a sudden, I'm now the Trooper Care Network guy, and half my week is consumed with this mission or this cause greater than me that I'm doing. It doesn't really matter what you invest yourself in. If you get involved with something important to you, all of a sudden, you're going to have less of an addiction to alcohol, or less of a need to be depressed and alone in your home, do drugs, whatever, be addicted to the internet or gambling or, whatever that thing is. The idle mind is the workshop of the devil, right? So fill that mind up with something, fill your mind up with something that's more important than you are, and then you're going to be dedicated to it. For some, that's their family. For some, that's their job. But it's got to be something that you value more than you. And if you're one of those people that are addicted to alcohol or drugs or whatever, name it, find something more valuable. And I think it starts with a prayer, personally, but it goes into so many other things. You know, God did not want us to just hang around and have an easy life. And nobody promised us that being a Christian meant that some holy halo of protection is going to envelop our entire body and protect us from everything. Because people forget the Lord created this beautiful earth, but Satan is a fucking landlord down here, and we have to work through his shit. So yes, there's going to be drugs. There's going to be all kinds of different opportunities for you to come off the path. But if you can set your compass and you can set your goals and your focus to an objective that keeps you guided in life, and you stay on that path, even when you fall off the road a couple of times, it's a lot easier to get back on, because you know what you're going toward. You got your compass set on that mountaintop, whatever that is. So that's what you see in Seattle. It's a bunch of people that are just derelict. They're idle. They've had everything of substance and meaning taken out of their society. They have nowhere else to turn. They have no mentors. They have nothing but drugs and alcohol and self-destruction.
That was the intent of social media all along, was to destroy the nuclear family. And I bring it up because, you know, over the last several years now, we've seen an uptick in addictions. We've seen an uptick in suicides. We've seen an uptick in a lot of different things. And all of it is traced right back to social media. It's part of the reason why I keep saying disconnect from it. You disconnect from social media, you're less agitated. It's like watching the news. The news is designed to keep you agitated. It's designed so that when the news programming is done, you are completely agitated. And they don't stop. They up the ante, which is what they're doing right now. And Troop's right. They want you to feel alone, isolated, and completely powerless. That's what they want. They want to instill the fear. They want to drive their narrative, and they want everybody to line up and do exactly what they're told and not talk back, not raise a fuss, just do what you're told. So that was a good point, Troop. I think, you know, when you don't believe in anything, it's easy to fall into that trap. And there's legitimately people that are trying to escape something. And there's people that are literally trying to forget something. But for the vast majority of people, it's right, because you're right. They don't have something to believe in. So that's why this aspect, and that's why social media is so dangerous, because it can consume your life, especially, who I'm really talking to is parents. Go look at how much your kid is on social media and what they're doing. You'll be surprised at how much shit that they're into. And this is the bigger thing. You'll be surprised how much personal information they put out into the web that you probably don't even know about. It's a massive problem. And this problem is expanding. It's going to get worse. Because the other thing we're seeing is an uptick in pedophiles. That's the one I can't explain right now, is why we're seeing more pedophiles being outed and it being publicized, because they're trying their level best to groom children right now. So I'm curious why that narrative's coming out. But the bigger conversation here is, go take a look at how much your kids are doing on social media, and then go look at and go listen to their talking points. I guarantee you, you're going to hear some liberal and communist talking points in there. So, well, we're coming up on hour and a half, and I want to keep this at an hour and a half. I think we're a little past, actually. You guys want to, let's start with closing comments. Unless anybody's got any other points to make, we should go to closing comments.
Did we cover all the topics that you had set out, Steve?
All but one, but that's fine. We'll cover it on next week's or the week after. So I guess we lost Dave. It's a technology day. All right, Chip, let's go with you for closing comments.
There's a couple of different PMs that were attacked today or attempted to attack. The Irish one, what the Irish Republican guy, really surprised me, because the guy that showed up to his office to attack him told the cops, told the Guardia, I'm going to go and kill this dude, or I'm going to go mess this guy up. And the cops are like, oh, okay. And thankfully they followed him there. But I don't want anybody to spin off on some paranoia that there's this, you know, global kill thing, like the last scene in Godfather, you know, where Don Corleone's, you know, sends his men out to kill all of his enemies. But if there's a third or a fourth one, a third or fourth PM or key political figure that is attacked, then I would say that we'd have something to talk about. But these two things are independent. We are going into the election, and I know Steve and I completely disagree on the voting thing. I think if you don't vote, you don't get to strap your plate carrier on and eat a bullet sandwich. So please register and please vote. And you know it. We're gonna see where these chips fall, whether we vote or not. But I don't want 80 million people to stay at home and go, man, we lost by 79 million votes, right? So get out there and do your shit. The other reason why you want to get out is because when you're out and you're visible and you're present, that makes all of the other nefarious things that they're trying to do in the darkness come to light. It's a lot more difficult to do shady things when you got more eyes on the ground. But I want to drive that point home today. Is I disagree with Steve and most of the other colonels actually on the phone. So you can believe them, believe me, listen to them, listen to me, follow your own heart. But I'm a strong believer in voting, and we're not going to vote our way out of this, but we need to show up to the ball game.
I'm going to jump in for just a second, and Troop, I hope you were not including me, because I'm with you 100% on the voting issue. In fact, I not only want to endorse your comment, I want to make a couple of tangential comments on that subject. First, I don't watch regular news very often at all, but I do occasionally skim channels just to see what's being discussed. And I can honestly say, I don't ever recall seeing so many different news stations, conventional media news stations, as apprehensive and occasionally downright frightened as to how badly Biden is doing in the polls. Usually at this point in an election cycle, we're being bombarded with the idea that, oh, Hillary Clinton is 13 points ahead of Trump, or whatever the nonsense was they were espousing. And so we're not actually seeing that. I mean, certainly I think most of the people listening to this podcast would acknowledge the fact that things were stolen in 2020. There are an abundance of different modalities for stealing our election, everything from digital to paper and so on. But what I think is important, and what gets lost, is the notion that they have to, in some sense, make things passable to the public eye. That is to say, that they want to keep it close enough. The globalists want to keep things close enough if indeed Biden would go against Trump. I still don't think Biden is going to be the candidate. But, and again, this goes back to those multiple lines of effort. And I talk about decision points that the globalists have to pass through, one of which being that, has asked themselves the question, is Biden a viable candidate? And I don't really see him as such. I think the actual polls, as usual, are way worse for the Democrats than what they would like to admit. But they're so bad that they're admitting they're bad. And so it's critical that everybody gets out and votes. It doesn't cost you anything but a little bit of time. And the more people that put the effort into it, the more difficult, the more out of reach it makes it. And the more apparent it makes it, if indeed they're going to cheat and throw things. And I think I see that as one of the major potential catalysts, as a call to action, as something that ignites people in temper and in action. If people simply sit back at home and don't get out because they don't think there's a point, then we have no chance, and we have most certainly lost. We've got to go out, take it across the finish line. Certainly they may steal the election. I expect that to happen, whether they put Newsom or Michelle Obama or whomever they choose. But we've got to get out and make it as difficult as possible, as challenging for them to make it look reasonable or look authentic, because you've got two-thirds of the American population that already acknowledges that there's an enormous amount of voter fraud. It's getting harder and harder for them to control that narrative. So don't make excuses. Get out. Take part. You should do it. And especially if you're a veteran, you should do it. You paid a price. Just take it across the line and finish the job.
And remember, your local vote is 100 times more valuable than this federal vote. I get they're focusing on Biden now. But remember, where they really screwed us was in local elections. And if everybody's getting out and voting in their local community, then they have to cheat in 30,000 different communities. So they don't have the resources to do that if everybody gets out and votes. So let them steal the presidency, but don't let them screw you again at the local level. Vote.
Colonel Piper.
I concur with both you gentlemen. You got to get out and vote. One of the things that we all served in defending is the responsibility to vote. And I call it a responsibility. I don't call it a right. It's a responsibility of we, the people who are supposed to be hiring and firing our government. One method of doing that is through the voting system. We have to do that. And I'll connect this with the April 19th event in 1775, in the Battle of Lexington, when 36, or was it 66, men stood on the green and got massacred. But they stood on the green. They got out there. They did it. They were not successful at all. But the rest of the country and the rest of the world learned that you have to get out there. You got to stand in front of them. As much as you're afraid of them, you have to do it. It has to be done. The key, though, is they were organized. They had drilled. They had lines of communication. And there were even people that had backup plans and sequels and branches ready to go. And we have got to do that. And that means organize yourself, meet your neighborhood, meet your neighbors, find out who's running your volunteer fire department, meet your sheriff, get out there, start building your own, in their terms back then, your own committee men to stand side by side when it's time. Over.
I would agree. And just for the record, I didn't say I'm not going to vote or don't go vote. I'm saying we're not going to get there. I think this is going to go off the rails long before that. I agree that I don't think that Biden's going to be the nominee. I think it's going to be Newsom or Dave, I know you think it's going to be Michelle Obama.
I think it'll be Newsom. I think Michelle turned them down. I think it will be Newsom.
Yeah, he's just awful enough to be completely awful and just, you know, evil enough to be ridiculously evil. So, yeah, I agree. I think he's their boy. And I think it's interesting the amount of the messaging that's been going on the last couple of, they're already starting to say he's not fit for duty, et cetera. I mean, there's been several things that have come out that have been less than favorable about his condition. So I think it's just a matter of time before that. I honestly think they'll take him out and they'll try and take Trump out too, or they will take Trump out. I think that's out there as well. There's a lot of variables that they can play. But either way, I don't think we're going to get there. I would say for the next couple of weeks, keep your eye on Carter. I think Carter's going to be a pivotal move, or at least a pivotal point. And we'll see things move after they do the ceremony and the show. I definitely think that he's been on ice for a while. I don't think he's just now dying. I think he died a while ago and they're just now releasing it. I think Troop's right about summer action. It's a perfect time. It's the heat of summer. So I think they're prepping for summer action. So
Steve, can I ask you a question, Steve, before
sure.
we get off?
Yeah.
Since we have all of us live here, I've tried to think through this matrix and war game this out, because I understand the argument of, and it's not just you, it's Doug McGregor and others have said, we don't think we're going to get there. I was beginning to think that, but then I look at history and I say, we had elections in World War II. We had election in the American Civil War. And for God's sakes, it was, you know, the Democratic side was George McClellan running against Lincoln. We had elections under the most arduous circumstances. And I do agree it's tempting to think that, martial law could be declared and those could be deemed circumstances to run things off the rails and take us away from having an actual election. But then I say to myself, what follows? What follows? And that's my question, because at some point we're going to have an election following that. And the risk with canceling an election is that you piss even more people off. The few people that are absorbed by the globalist narrative will be all the more diminished if they see greater authoritarian rule on the part of the Democrats and the Biden administration. The very things that they were accusing Trump of doing will be done, if I understand what you're saying, by the Democrats. How do you see things playing out if you think they're not going to have an election?
I think a couple of things. Dave, if you listen to the messaging that they've done for the past 6 months now, they've been doing it here, they've been doing it in Canada as well. You know, are you prepped for some kind of an event? Do you have food and water on hand in case there's a natural disaster or some kind of emergency? They need a catalyst to leverage all these military age males. They need some kind of an event for that to happen. And I see that when they get to that event, I see that event going off the rails. I mean, we've talked about this, right? Every time you have a complex operation, as soon as you step off the line of departure, everything goes sideways. And I see that happening here. Like, we've all talked about the law of unintended consequences. How many times? I see the law of unintended consequences hitting them in the face in a very, very real way and driving things out of their control. And they want a mechanism to declare martial law. They want a mechanism to bring in some kind of UN troop presence. What that looks like, I don't know, but they're desperate for that. And they haven't been able to make good or at least capitalize on any of the things that they've done thus far, even from a narrative perspective. So it is, they get closer and closer to the election. I see that the danger of something major happening where they lose control being greater and greater. In fact, every day that goes by and they're not able to build the same level of violence that they did around the 2020 election with Chaz and Antifa and BLM and that whole series of events, I see them getting more and more desperate to do something major. And I think that they have all these things, like you said, pre-planned, and they're trying to choose which playbook they use. And once they do that, I see it going off the rails. I mean, how long can you garrison millions and millions of military age males and not use them? I don't see a mechanism where they don't use them this year, especially before the election. I don't think they give a shit who they install. I think that's just show. I think that the reality is they don't care who they put in place because they've got control of everybody. And either way that you go, the election, I don't think matters to them as much as consolidating power. And I see, you know, a number of different options there to do that. I mean, the tell was the fact that they passed the anti-Semitism law. That in and of itself is a tell that they're consolidating power right now, and they're going to continue to erode all of our big R rights through these micro legislation pieces for the next several years. And it's just a matter of time before they do something major. And they've already said, you know, they told us years ago, there's going to be cyber events. There's going to be infrastructure events. The bridge in Galveston is not a coincidence that was hit this week. So I think all those lines of operation are coming home, are going to converge before the election. That's how I see it playing out. If I'm looking at the information that they're putting out, they're telling us what they're going to do. And they're telling us we got multiple lines of operation we can use. What they're not telling us, and this is where Tom Luongo and I differ, is that he sees that the project managers are in charge and the key leaders are all starting to die off. I think the other tell this week was, did you guys see the portrait of King What's-His-Nuts, Dopey Ears?
Yeah. Oh, my God.
They're not even hiding it anymore. They're not even hiding the satanic overtones in that. They're not even hiding the fact that there's, if you put the pictures side by side, you see satanic images blended.
King Pharaoh's doing a blood angel inside of a fucking maxi pad. It's unreal.
Yeah, it's they're not even hiding it. So it's on plain display. And that tells me that they have to go along with their plans no matter what. They're fully committed now. Good, bad, or indifferent. They're completely committed to whatever plan that they've chosen. And if Tom's right and the project managers are running the show, it means the system's going to continue until it runs off the rails on its own. I don't think that's going to happen. I think they're going to do some kind of a false flag or a green flag attack, and it's going to go off the rails. That's what I think. Because they've already threatened, the FBI has already said, along with DHS, that there's going to be some kind of an October 7th attack here on our soil. And that lines up exactly with what you were saying, Troop, that they'll ignore some intelligence and let an attack happen, then blame it on Iran or Hamas or Hezbollah. And they're already importing Hamas here. So there's like I said, they have a bunch of different playbooks to choose from. So I would say this, and I'll wrap this up. Pay attention to what's going on with Carter, because I think there's some signal in there. I don't know what it is yet, but there's some signal in there. And once he passes, I think you're going to start to see things accelerate. We've already agreed, all of us have already agreed, that things are accelerating. I think they're going to continue to accelerate. So if you haven't been preparing, start preparing. And if you need a link for that, the book on DARPA, I'll post it in the comments section after the show. I'll be back on Monday with a set rep. I'm doing an interview with Matt Bracken on Friday to talk about the green flag stuff, because I want him to dig into that a little more deeper, because I think that's a relevant discussion for everybody for this week. And we'll be back next week with the roundtable. Gentlemen, I appreciate it. Appreciate the flexibility. And I think the tech problems are going to continue.
Cool.
We'll be back next week. God bless everyone. One team, one fight.
Cool.